Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by... Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small-batch, artisan coffee using top-tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic-themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/Breadbox Media. Experience coffee like never before.
Keep it up. Woo! My fellow truth seekers, welcome to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio, where faith and reason meets every single Monday evening between 10 and 11 p.m., bringing a little sanity into our age of insanity, a little life into our culture of death. We're broadcasting here live at the WCAP studios, 980 a.m. on your dial if you're within range. And if you're not, we're live streamed on the TuneIn app as well as the WCAP websites. And we end up podcasted throughout the internet on various sites. Glad you could join us tonight. Paul Morano here with my guest, the one, the only, there he is, ladies and gentle things, Mr. Jonifer Tudis. Tudoris.
I am a Jonifer. Hey, you are. Hey, how you doing?
You are. Next to my wife.
I thought he was a dinosaur.
Well, he is. But next to my wife, there's Jennifer and Jonifer.
Right.
So I just had to say that.
Right. I need a fur to be with.
That's
in
right.
Order to be officially a Jonifer.
That's right.
Right. Like there was Bennifer, yes. And then there's.
That's right. There was Bennifer. Yeah.
And then there was Bradley.
Actually.
Yeah.
Actually, the two of us are Paulifer.
Oh, yes. Paulifer. That's a
right.
Good one, too.
Yes. But as Cindy behind the glass did mention, and rightfully so, that you are usually a Jontosaurus.
Yes, yes, I am.
And if you're lucky, you're a Jontosaurus Rex.
Dinosaur!
I am. Yeah. Or if I'm texting, then I'm a Jontosaurus text.
That's true. Yes. That's true. It just depending on what you're doing.
Exactly.
Yes. Now, as you know, John, the 41st President of the United States just passed away.
Yes.
Do you have a tribute for him? I'm just wondering.
Well, you know, I've got to be with Barb now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, in heaven, of course, I'm sure broccoli tastes good. It's good. That's right. I'm hoping I'm there. That's right. Want to be in the good place. Good. Yeah. Good. Good place is a good place to be. Yeah. 1,000 points a lot. Really bright here.
Yeah.
Really bright. That's where I want to be.
Very good. And is that Mr. Reagan that you have there in heaven near you? Mr. Bush, is that who I see?
Well, hello, George.
There they are, the two ex-presidents, 40 and 41, right there. John, you are a man of many voices.
Sometimes. You know what I learned today, actually?
Yeah.
I was in the pizza place on Facebook, and I'm sure you know Anthony Esselin.
Okay, yeah.
And he actually, turns out, does impressions as well.
Does he really?
That's what it said in the post. I haven't heard any, but some of the ones that he does.
Well, some people say they do them, and, you know, I don't know if they're really up to par, at least not with you.
Well,
know what I'm saying?
But
we should get him on here to do his impression.
That's what I told him.
Yeah.
That's what I told him.
In fact, he could, if he's listening, which I doubt he is. A lot of people have many things to do in this world. But if he happens to be listening, he could come on here and pretend he is a character, whatever character he chooses.
Yeah.
It could be a friend of his. It could be a movie star. Who cares? And we will never say that it's him. And we'll just do the entire interview that way.
We could, or if you remember from the old Saturday Night Live, they had the dueling Brandos.
Yes.
And if he does a Marlon Brando, we could do dueling Brandos.
You do a Marlon?
Yeah, a little.
Okay.
A little here.
All right. I sense that you don't want to test it out right now, or?
Well, it depends. See, yeah. You got to get in the mood for Marlon Brando.
Oh, there has to be a certain mood for Marlon.
Yeah. And there's the earlier Marlon Brando, which is what most people do, and then there's the little later stuff, you know, The Godfather,
where
it's like he's got two big balls of cotton in his cheeks. And
I see, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but I could, you know, you give me a little warm up,
yeah.
You know, and then once the tape rolls,
then you're good.
Good
Brando stuff. All right.
Yeah, some stuff you can do on a dime. Some stuff you need a little workup.
Well, I tell you what, if you out there want to hear John doing an impersonation, because he does millions of them. So if it's somebody famous, give us a call here and request it, and he will do it for you. 978-454-4980. That's 978-454-4980 for your favorite impression. All right, so you are going to be the Rich Little of tonight if anybody calls.
Perhaps,
all right,
yeah.
Good. Well, in the meantime, we have ourselves a Beneath the Surface topic, do we not?
Yes, we do.
We do. And that topic tonight, at least the main topic, and we can stray from it if you would like, or if anybody would like to call in with another topic, feel free. But our main topic tonight, renewal and the season of Advent. Renewal and the seasons, right. Renewal and the season of Advent. And before we get to that, let me give you our phone number, 978-454-4980. Or you can just contact us at facebook.com/fellowtruthseekers. All one word. 978-454-4980. All right, John. So, I guess it's always good to start with a couple of definitions. We've got two main words on each side of that phrase.
Yeah.
One is renewal, and the other one is Advent.
Yeah.
I think everybody knows what season means, generally speaking. Sure. All right, so renewal in the season of Advent. Let's define Advent first.
Sure.
For all those non-Catholics, non-Christians out there.
So the season of Advent, at least in the, we call it the Western Church, is 4 weeks before the season of Christmas.
And the season of Christmas, of course, the secular world starts it right after the second the last bite of the turkey is consumed on Thanksgiving.
Or Black Friday.
Or even Black Friday. But, but, of course, according to the church calendar, the season of Christmas begins on
Christmas
Day.
I was going to say Eve, because you do have the Vigil Mass.
Yes.
Right?
That's right. Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
All right.
So liturgically, you could actually start the evening before with the Vigil Mass.
All right. So the church does it the opposite of the world. The world ends Christmas season on Christmas. The church begins Christmas season on Christmas.
Yeah. That old song, remember, the 12 Days of Christmas?
Absolutely. It's a great song.
Right. It's and actually, traditionally, that goes from Christmas to the Epiphany, which is traditionally on January 6th, at least again in the Western Church.
And when is the baptism of John?
It's about a week or two after that.
Is it the baptism of John or is it the feast day of John the Baptist?
Well, there's a couple of feast days. His birth and his death are both commemorated.
Okay. All right. Is that during the Christmas season or is that right afterwards?
That's afterwards.
Okay.
Yeah, and some people actually, the people who are really, if you would call them, church geeks.
Yes.
Some people actually keep their Christmas trees up all the way until the baptism of John.
Or the presentation.
That's right, the presentation.
February 2nd.
Yep, which is just before Lent starts.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you know what I say? I tell you what I say.
Tell me what you say.
If you don't know it already. We have, you know, here in New England anyway, this is being broadcast out of New England, Lowell, Massachusetts. Here we have such a long, dark and cold winter season.
Yeah.
That it's nice to have it brightened up by Christmas lights. Whether it be on a tree, inside the house, outside the house, all of that fun stuff, it sort of brightens up the season. You know what I mean? It gives you a little oomph to get through the Christmas, the winter season.
Yeah.
So, why can't we celebrate Christmas all the way to and through the Christmas season and continue with the lighting all the way to spring? Or at least to March 1st.
You know, there are some people who do that. I used to live in southern Vermont, and there, like here, you know, the snow comes, it might go away. There, it sticks. I mean, that's a bit more up in the hills.
Yes.
And it's not uncommon to get, you know, 4, 5, 6 feet of accumulated snow throughout the winter. And there are some people, and I had neighbors just around the corner, they would keep the lights on the tree outside. It wasn't even like a pine tree. It was just a regular small tree. And it was actually kind of nice. I mean, it was there all throughout the year.
Yes. Oh, throughout the winter. Or is it throughout the year?
Well, actually, through the winter part
of
the year.
Yeah. Yeah, I see no reason to stop the lighting.
Except for an electric bill.
Except for an electric bill. But
now with the LED lights, they're pretty cheap.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. And also, another thing that gets my goat, most of the Christmas songs that are being played are from Thanksgiving or even pre-Thanksgiving now, maybe post-Halloween, to Christmas Day. And none of them, or very rarely anymore, are real Christmas songs. They're usually winter songs.
Well, it's a very non-PC, un-PC to mention the reason for the season.
Yeah. Now, I don't even want to get into that tonight, but my point here is that most of the songs that are being played on the radio stations and so forth during the season are winter songs. Even the most popular Christmas song there is, Jingle Bells, is not a Christmas song. It's a winter song. It's about two people getting into a sleigh. They're on a date. And there's one horse that's pulling them, and they're having fun. There's no mention of Christmas. It has nothing to do with Christmas. It's a winter song.
Well, you know what it is, though, I think on that? At least when that came out, it was more assumed that that's part of the backdrop, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just in the atmosphere. So there's the assumption that, it's a Christmas season.
Well, if you listen to it, it's a winter song. It's just a song celebrating winter. Like,
well, how often in the winter do you have jingle bells?
Well,
ho, 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 ho.
There are bells on Santa's sleigh. I understand that, but there's also bells on one horse open sleighs.
Yes, and how many of those have you seen lately?
Well, before
in the mall,
before cars, they were all over the place.
Christmas when you get Santa,
but the weather outside is frightful. I mean, all of these songs are winter songs, and they're kind of fun songs.
Yeah.
So what gets my goat is they're not being played throughout winter.
Mm.
They stop immediately on Christmas Day.
And I think it goes back to what I said. There is the assumption that in the backdrop, there is still Christmas on the horizon.
Well, I understand that, but it makes no sense.
Yeah.
I say play Christmas songs for Christmas and play winter songs throughout the winter season.
And you know what's
funny?
We're not even in winter yet.
We're not even in winter yet,
calendar.
So I know.
But weather-wise,
could have fooled me.
Feeling winterish.
Yeah, big time. Big time. 978-454-4980. Believe it or not, you're listening to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP. All right, so you ready to get Beneath the Surface,
yep.
Mr. John?
All right.
Our topic is renewal and the season of Advent, so you've explained to us the season of Advent. Does it relate to renewal? And are we talking about personal renewal, community renewal, church renewal, family renewal? What kind of renewal are we talking about here? And how does that relate to Advent?
In one way, we could say all of them. So we're talking individual, immediate community, local community, church type of community. So across the board, Advent is a season for renewal. And what's the purpose, of course, for the renewal, right? So what's the main goal that people are looking at? Well, there's two when it comes to Advent.
Yeah.
The one, of course, is that we look towards, in remembrance of Christ who came almost 2,000 years ago in the form of a babe, the incarnation where God made man.
Okay.
So that's one thing that we look for. And then
Wait. What do you mean by look for?
Well, we look... towards that, so when we look in past, right, so we see scripture, right, like the gospel, the empty narrative in Luke. So, but when we say look for it, in so much as that the seasons of renewal are also times for contemplation.
All right, so the Christmas season is there to help us contemplate the almighty, eternal, invisible creator of the universe, who came down from heaven and took on a human nature and became one of us.
Yes.
All right, so that,
so
obviously, that is worth contemplating.
Yeah, and it's one thing to know that. It's another to interiorize it. And then,
that's a huge difference.
And allow it to affect you.
A lot of those people who were brought up Christian in some way or another, or even American, because Christianity, at least when we were growing up, was more permeated the culture, we know that in our heads, that Christianity believes that the second person of God came down from heaven and took on human nature, was born in a manger from the Virgin Mary, and he taught and he preached, he performed miracles, and he died, he rose from the dead, he conquered death, and now he ascended into heaven. Basically, we know that in our heads. Now, very often, there's a long way between head and heart, isn't there, when it comes to that?
Oh, goodness,
I mean,
yeah.
If you're not absolutely blown away by the prospect of this occurring, it really didn't sink into your heart, did it?
No. Or even in the mind, really, when you think about it. I mean, it's so much in the atmosphere, even now, to a certain degree, you know, that this idea that, you know, Jesus was born a babe. And you hear it so much that you can almost be numb to what it actually means.
Yeah.
So taking the time to contemplate that actually allows it to move the heart of a person.
I think one of the things that might be a good exercise is to pretend and imagine that you were brought up in a pre-Christian culture. Mm. And then somebody said, this has just happened. How would you, first of all, you might not believe them. But if you did, how would you think? Well, how would you feel?
Mind equals blown.
What? Oh.
The mind.
Okay. Yes.
Oh, yeah. No, really, if I was an honest-to-goodness pagan, like, not, I mean, that I took it seriously, right?
Yeah.
And then someone said to me that not only did God become a creature, did he take, that it wasn't just any God, it was the God.
Okay.
It was like, wait, so it's so revolutionary on so many levels.
It's so, and I'm saying this in the best possible, you know, way to understand this word, it's so bizarre for the person who never heard this. Like the Jew and the Muslim still say, well, how can this possibly, you know, how could that possibly be? And, of course, a Christian says something similar, but we take the leap of faith and we say yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, and even like the ancient Greek, right? I mean, you get characters, and I know we've mentioned them multiple times on this program in the past, guys like Aristotle or even Socrates, they would come to a conclusion that there's a one God. But, you know, they never came to the conclusion that that one God could incarnate himself within the world.
Become a human being. Why would he do that? Why would he become part of his own creation? Why would he write himself into his own story? He's way above that. That's the thinking.
Yeah.
We'll challenge that thought, and we'll talk more about it, and talk more about this whole notion of what it means to renew. That's another one. I mean, were we ever new? 978-454-4980, renewal and the season of Advent. That's a nice flute. We will come back to Beneath the Surface right after this. Don't go anywhere.
Joseph, dearest Joseph, mine, help me cradle the child.
We are back. Beneath the Surface, Paul Marano here with my guest, Mr. John Tutoris, talking about renewal in the season of Advent. Okay, John, so the coming of Christ, who is, to take a step backwards, the eternal second person of the Holy Trinity, takes on a human nature, becomes part of his own creation, in order to save his people from the metaphorical quicksand that they place themselves in by rejecting God. And, of course, the rest literally is history and super history. So why is this a cause for renewal, John? Tell me about that.
Well, there's a part two, and this also adds to the renewal, right?
Yes, please.
Because it's also not just a look back. The reason for the look back is so that we can better look forward. And so what the look forward is, the second coming of Christ.
Oh, so Advent is for both comings.
Yes, it
is. There are two comings of Christ.
Absolutely.
One that happened in history 2,000 years ago, and another one that will happen in history when?
Oh, we don't know the day or the hour. Isn't that funny? At some points, we get the general markers of it. You know, for example, that the gospel message would have been communicated through the whole world. That's one. But also that there would be what they call a mass apostasy, meaning that those who
are... Oh, boy,
are
that sounds like it might be happening.
Yeah, so yeah. Those within the church would actually be rejecting it on a massive level. But we don't know exactly. The general recipe is to be prepared. Now, how do you be prepared? This gets to the part.
Prepared for what?
The second coming.
Of Jesus.
Yeah. And okay. Actually, the thing is, since we don't know the day or the hour when he comes, we do know that, in particular, if he doesn't come, we're all going to die at some point. And so the
as individuals, sure.
As individuals,
yeah, we only have
right?
a few decades, yeah.
Yeah, and we don't know exactly when our day or the hour. Sometimes, some might say it's not a good thing to know, but in some ways it can be very beneficial. Some people do know when they're going to die. For example, if I go to the doctor and he says, you know, you have cancer, you have 6 months to live, in general, I know that I have a short span of time left. Unless by miracle, I get out of it, my time on earth will be short, and I know it. And that gives me more or less a definitive period of time to prepare.
Okay.
But for the rest of us, you know, I don't. I mean, I could live for one more day. I could get hit by a car tomorrow, or I could live for another 50 years.
Now,
I don't know.
There are people listening who understand what you mean by prepare.
Yeah.
But there are others who might be saying, prepare for what?
Yes, prepare for what happens upon our death.
All right. What do you believe happens beyond, upon our death?
Well, one is we have an immortal soul. We don't just dissipate out into the nothingness, too. You know, we're a spirit-matter composite, and there are consequences to how we live our life. There's an old saying that hell begins here and heaven begins here. And the choices we make send us on certain trajectories, right?
Okay.
But, of course, the real goal is that do we finish the race right?
Okay. So then what you mean by we have, if we know the time that we are going to die, we have some time to prepare.
Yeah.
You mean to get things right on this earth,
to
maybe ask forgiveness for people you've hurt, maybe tie up loose ends and certainly strengthen, or at least attempt to strengthen your relationship with God.
Sure. And I'm sure most of us at some point have seen a Western movie, and there's always that point where they say your prayers, partner, you know, or maybe they get sentenced to hanging, and they'll make sure that you make your peace with God. And all that, of course, is within the larger context of when you die, there's consequences for how you live this life. And so what happens is that people seek the mercy of God. Because in some ways, we all fall short, right? Jesus is very clear.
You
must be perfect as your Heavenly Father is perfect. Is any of us, can we any of us claim that? The answer is no.
Okay.
So what ought we do? Surely we should pursue it, right? But in recognizing that we all fall short, we ought to appeal to God's mercy. Always.
Well, there's one thing in appealing to God's mercy, but there's another thing in becoming better and less selfish.
That's right.
And holier.
And that's the part of pursuing it.
Okay, so it's not one or the other.
It's both.
Yeah. A lot of people, I think, would say, well, if God's merciful, then it doesn't matter much what I do or, you know, the kind of lifestyle I live, because I will appeal to his mercy.
Well, now, then that's not really appealing to his mercy. That's what they don't understand.
Yeah, that's not. that's certainly not Christianity.
No, not at all. That's like if a kid says to their parent, "Well, you're going to forgive me, so I'm just going to go out and I'm going to take the car and I'm going to trash it and I'm going to do whatever I want because and then I'll just say sorry at the end." Well, people say, "Well, that's ridiculous. You don't really mean it because you're just going to go out and do all these things." You know, and abuse the privileges that your parents gave you.
So there's that extreme. And then there's the other extreme of people trying to become better and better. They work really hard at becoming good people. And they don't depend on or seek God's mercy. And that may even be more dangerous.
Well, in some ways, yeah. And that type of outlook generally sees the peak of human existence as being here on earth, right?
Yeah.
So I might go out, I'm, you know, taking all sorts of means and measures and to better myself physically, maybe in getting really good physical health. to build up my financial portfolio.
And that all relates to preparing for this life, for things to be comfortable in this life. That's what that's preparing
even
for.
Even though I know ultimately that I'm going to die.
Yeah, and of course, what you were talking about is preparing for eternity.
Yes.
All right.
Which is far greater.
All right, so the season of Advent relates to us keeping in mind the incarnation or Christ's first coming, as well as Christ's second coming when he comes in glory at the end of history to judge the living and the dead. And renewal means renewing one's relationship with him, with each other?
Yes, and not even just that. It's our own person, right? I mean, we get tired of things after a while. You think about it. For example, like sports, right? Ever notice that all of our major sports that people participate in as well as follow, they have seasons throughout the year.
Yes.
I mean, as much as people like the Patriots or the Red Sox or the Celtics or whatever your favorite team is, for whatever sport, would you really like them as much if they were playing all throughout the year? Would the players like it as much, quite frankly? You know? And think about it.
Get tired of it.
They would. They would. I mean, there's periods where they have to prepare so that they can execute things well.
And for fans, opening day is exciting.
Yeah.
If there was no break, if there was no renewal, it would just be another day.
Yeah.
But it's exciting.
It is.
All right. I understand.
Yeah.
I think another metaphor or analogy could be somebody's garage. I mean, it's amazing how many things can accumulate, whether it be a garage or an attic or even a bedroom, without you even realizing it.
Oh, yeah.
And the whole notion of spring cleaning, you'd say to yourself, well, I didn't put anything new there. But if you were to take a picture of the year before, totally different. Totally different. So, yeah, there needs to be cleaning out of rooms. One could say, if you look inwardly, you could say the same thing about your soul. You need to clean out your soul now and then. Sometimes you don't even recognize how dusty and imbalanced and in need of grace and mercy.
And that's actually a really good point, because there are some people, not everyone, but there are some people who actually keep their garage clean. They don't accumulate extra stuff. Mm-hmm. But you know what does accumulate is just what you mentioned, things like dust.
Oh, yeah.
Other small things.
Something does,
In my apartment, which is way dustier than others, if I let things go, which unfortunately I do, but, you know, if I let it go for a couple months and I go to the top of a shelf and I wipe my hand on it, there is tons of dust on there.
Yeah, so cleansing, renewal, it's just a universal phenomenon, whether it be inanimate objects or living objects or human persons.
Even agriculture is that way, which is really fascinating.
A harvest, a planting.
And not just, I mean, we see that pretty starkly here in the Northeast, because we have very clear seasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we know that, you know, we're not growing much in the winter unless you got a greenhouse, you know, and even in the hardcore gardeners know that certain plants do better in the fall and the early spring, like certain leafy greens. Others do good in the hot heat of the sun. And they're good at maximizing their crops because they know which parts of which seasons things grow well in. And so you would see that in the Northeast. But then if you go to places like Florida or California where you think they have a monoclimate, guess what? They have growing seasons too. It's actually pretty universal no matter where someone is in the world.
All right. Then let's bring this all to the human soul and the human person, this notion of renewal. And I understand that Lent is also a season of renewal, which is the 40 days that lead up to Easter.
Yes.
Advent is the 40 days that leads up to Christmas.
Used to be. Now it's in the West. It's been shortened to, it used to be closer to 40 days.
Oh, that's true.
It used to be longer, about 6 weeks, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
But for the last few hundred years, it's been about 4 weeks.
And this is also, would you say it's renewal light or Lent light when it comes to renewal?
Kind of. It used to be, in some ways, very strict. It's very similar to Lent. And actually, in some Eastern Christian denominations or churches, it'll actually be just as strict as it is during Lent. So, and some people who really get into it, you know, again, you're sort of the ones who are a bit geeky about it, if you will, they'll actually look at it and see it as an opportunity that even though they're not required to, they desire to do so on their own.
So create their own kinds of penances for themselves.
Kind of. And not in any extraordinary way, in so much as think of it as someone in a healthy way who recognizes themselves personally, right? Because everyone's a little different.
Yeah.
You know, we have our all pluses, our minuses, our aptitudes, and what have you. But someone recognizing themselves and say, you know what? For example, I can fast on a Friday. I can fast on a Wednesday, too. So even though Advent doesn't call for that particularly, they could say, you know, of their own accord, that I wish to do so. And they know that they can do that because they've tested it out. You know, they realize that it can actually be a healthy thing for them.
And fasting is a form of renewal?
It is.
It renews the person?
Certainly on a natural level, which is, and I know we did a show on fasting before, that actually can have some good health benefits as well as spiritual, too.
Physical health and
that's
spiritual
right.
health.
That's
yeah.
right.
So then why is fasting a common practice amongst religious people if its benefits are physical?
Oh, well, one is that it's, at least from a religious standpoint, would say it's the whole person that worships God, not just the mind, the soul. It's the whole person.
Yeah.
And that God, in his goodness, created us for these things. So if God asks us to do fasting, he's also considering the good of our health. He's not saying, do this because it's detrimental to your overall good health. Rather, he's saying, do this because it'll benefit you. Now, he may not explain it that way, but in his infinite wisdom, when he declares this, he recognizes he created us, so he knows how we work, how we operate, how we function.
So could you compare it to, say, lifting weights? If somebody is a bodybuilder, the idea of going into a gym and lifting weights is not pleasurable, if you will. It's hard work. It's sacrifice. But you get benefits from it, right?
Yeah.
So would you say that fasting is something that is a sacrifice? You don't say, you know, I want to fast because it's pleasurable. You say, I want to fast because of the overall benefits that come from it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So then when you deny yourself physically of particular foods or all food for a certain period of time, would you say that this gives opportunity for the spiritual components to sort of rise up and maybe become more conscious of important things?
Oh, sure.
I know during the day, for example, I'm very often thinking of what's coming up with regard to food or enjoying what I just had when it comes to food. So a lot of my mind is kind of occupied during the day on a normal day with food, and I think everyone's is. Take that away, and your mind all of a sudden becomes freed to truly focus on what's important. No?
That's right. And I would also add, too, that the two, we have appetites, right? Food and drink for the survival of the individual person, sex for the survival of the species.
Yep.
And those type of appetites in our weak human state can go out of balance.
Oh, no question.
Yeah.
Because of original sin, they are out of balance.
So aside from the natural effect of, you know, not being too preoccupied with these things, it's also a way to keep those appetites in check and actually allow the will to master the appetites rather than the appetites mastering the will.
And fasting is sort of like a spiritual exercise in order to have more power over your appetites.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I want to get into that a little more, plus more things as you hear We Three Kings of Orient Are. Our phone number here is 978-454-4980. You're listening to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP. Paul Marano with my guest this week, John Tudorus, talking about renewal. And the season of Advent. We will be back in a moment.
Prepare ye the way. of the Lord. Prepare ye the way of the Lord. Prepare ye the way of the Lord. Prepare ye the way of the Lord.
Woo, doggy. All right, a little Godspell for you with me giving a little little harmony in the background there. 978-454.
That was beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you, Cindy. 978-454-4980 is your phone number. And we are talking about that season that is all about preparing the way of the Lord in your hearts, in your minds, and in your lives. Because it is a season for commemorating his coming. So we are preparing for his coming as what happened in the past, his first coming, which is the Christmas season, and as will happen in the future, his second coming, which ends history as we know it, and is the general resurrection, where people will be transformed and glorified in ways that we cannot possibly imagine at this point. My guest, Mr. John Tudors. John, as you mentioned during break, there are three universal things that all religions tend to practice as spiritual exercise, and they are prayer, fasting, and almsgiving. Want to elaborate a little on that?
Oh, sure. So, of course, we talked about fasting.
Yep.
As far as prayer, really, it's a prayer to God, right?
Okay.
And well, of course, what is the prayer for? Now, the end goal can be a little different depending upon the religion, but really it's one is, of course, supplication. You know, for example, I need these things, or what have you. Mm-hmm. But at its highest level, and this you'll find perhaps more pronounced in something like Christianity, is really this adoration, this love of God for the sake of God himself.
Yeah.
Because his nature in a certain way demands it, not in like a... You know, some people think of God as throwing tits and tats, you know, like he's someone miffed because he's getting jealous in a human sort of way. But it's not that at all. It's that there's a certain justice, a right orderedness in our love of God.
So, in other words, it is for our good that we adore and worship God.
Oh, absolutely.
We are created for that, and without that, we cannot be happy.
That's right. Objectively speaking, God doesn't need us by his nature.
But we need him, and we need to adore and worship him.
Yes.
Which is interesting, because usually you think on an earthly level that the one who is being worshipped is getting the, you know, all the good stuff.
Yeah.
You know? But here, in this situation, spiritually, it very often paradoxically works the other way around, where the one worshiping is the one that is being added and being fulfilled.
It's very fascinating, particularly in Christianity, with the idea of the incarnation, that God actually came for us, is fascinating. And why did he come? He didn't come so that we could do all these things and sort of... inflate his ego or anything like that. He came to die that we might live.
Mm.
So the God of everything, who doesn't actually need us, allows himself to be killed for the sake of us, to redeem us.
Well, even before that, he allows himself to become one of us.
That's right.
A little, puny, finite human creature.
The God of the universe,
the eternal
speck on a planet.
Infinite God of the universe chooses to become one of us, who he created in his image and likeness, in order to do what you said.
Yeah, yeah. It is in that fascinating scene at the Last Supper in John's Gospel, where he washes the feet of the apostles.
Yes.
And God of the universe washing people's feet. And keep in mind, this isn't nowadays where we're wearing socks and shoes all the time, where even if they're a little stinky, they're still kind of clean looking. These people are out in sandals and their bare feet. Their feet are dirty.
Yeah,
their
filthy.
Feet are dirty.
Yeah.
And he's washing their feet. God washes people's feet. And he does that to set an example.
Yeah, as to what his followers should do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
to follow the way of the Master.
Yeah, so prayer, fasting, almsgiving, and I suppose good works.
Yeah.
And what you just mentioned, the washing of the feet represents charitable works.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that these things are generally found in most of your major religions. You can find these certain periods of renewal, you know, where people are penance, fasting, almsgiving. You know, for example, in Judaism, they have, which of course Christianity has its certain roots in,
sure,
if you will.
It's born
and
out
so
of
they
Judaism.
They have their 10 days of repentance. So it starts with Rosh Hashanah,
yeah,
and then it ends on Yom Kippur, which is the Day of Atonement.
Yes.
And during that period, they will actually, there are only certain foods they can eat. And there, of course, there's prayer, certain prayers that they would pray, and there is, you know, fasting. There's almsgiving is encouraged.
Yeah. So this isn't unique to a particular religion. It's universally recognized as the way to renew somebody from within.
Yeah.
Renovate somebody from within.
That's right. You could say that it's actually natural for a person to need this renewal and recognize they need this renewal.
It's very easy for Americans, middle class Americans, or even poor Americans, because they're really a lot richer than most people in the world, and of course rich Americans. It's really easy for Americans to get lazy.
Oh goodness.
Very
so
easy.
Much, we have so much stuff.
We've got stuff, we've got places to live, we've got food to eat. We've got all this. We have televisions to watch, computers to look at, and iPhones. All of this stuff, number one, I mean, you could call it good in and of itself, but it's very, very, very easily misused and abused. And fasting off this stuff could be just as spiritually beneficial as fasting off food or other, I mean, whatever really is, whatever you feel is getting in the way, some kind of barrier or obstacle to the fullness of the relationship with God that you could and should have. Anything that is a barrier to that, one could see as something to sacrifice during the season of Advent. Yes?
Oh absolutely. Because we all have different degrees or appetites, things that affect us. But, you know, what might bog one person down is not necessarily bogging someone else down.
Yeah.
So to some degree, you could say it's almost not about what someone has, but rather how attached they are to those things rather than the one who gives them. I would say a good model for this is the Old Testament character of Job.
All right.
And so here we have Job, who Scripture tells us was very rich according to the means of the day, right? He had all sorts of things, plenty of children. And the real important thing on this is that he didn't take it for granted, right? So even though he had all this stuff, he didn't have this stuff for the sake of the stuff itself to say, I'm rich, I've made it. No, he still loved God above all else.
Yeah, it's an interesting contrast to the story in Luke and Matthew about the rich young man.
Yeah.
You know, what do I do, Jesus, what do I do to gain eternal life or to enter eternal life? And of course, the first thing Jesus, basically he starts naming off the commandments and say, obey, you know, these 10 commandments. And the rich young man says, but I do obey these commandments. What else can I do? There's still something missing. And Jesus saw that in this young man, that there was still something greatly missing in him, that he was doing the minimal, but there's something, some kind of barrier going on there. So he looked at him and he said, sell all of your things to the poor, and then come follow me. And what did the rich young man do?
He went away sad.
He went away sad because he had many things, and he was apparently attached to them.
Yeah, and that's the key, is the attachment itself. I mean, in that passage, there's basically two things. One, of course, is don't be attached to your stuff. We all have tendency towards that, but to recognize that, and again, you know, take that time to recognize it and say, okay, well, how do I not be attached to this, right?
It's very easy to be addicted to comfort and security.
And the other two.
And material things.
And I would say this also goes to the point that to each person, it's not always the same. So particularly for that young man, he personally was called to sell everything and then give it to, and then sell, give to the poor and come
because
to follow Christ.
Apparently because Jesus saw in him that was a barrier for him. Another person, it might not be.
Well, that's
or,
right.
Or not be as much.
And not even just that, but the some particular callings require the removal of those excess things, right?
Mm.
So tradition with a small t holds that that rich young man was actually the gospel writer Mark.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's not an absolute,
right.
But it's tradition with the small t held in certain areas that that was actually the gospel writer Mark.
Hmm. Very
also known as John Mark. So, yeah, and he was a companion of Peter in his later days, and of course also Paul as well too.
Paul. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So then, what do you suggest people do, whether they're Catholic or non-Catholic, whether they're religious or not religious, if they want to use this time in union with Christians around the world to renew themselves? What would you say is the way of thinking about how to get started?
Sure. Well, one, I would say it's easy, is start with almsgiving. In fact, at the heart of all renewal is the virtue of charity.
Mm-hmm.
And by charity, we're talking about an authentic self-giving for the sake of the other.
So is almsgiving all three of the T's, time, treasure, and talent? Or is it just treasure?
I'm not really a fan of that
that
slogan that you'll see in, because it misses too much.
Okay.
You'll see that in some parishes, time, treasure, talent.
And what are you a fan of?
I'm a fan of just entire and full. Give to God according to the measure that you're able to,
mm-hmm.
and that you ought to. Because everyone, you know, there's basic guidelines that are universal for everyone, but how that's applied to each and every person.
But almsgiving literally speaks about money, right?
Oh, well, it's not just money for the sake of giving money. Or,
no, I didn't
or
say for the sake of, but I'm saying that's what you give.
Yes.
Okay.
That's correct.
All right.
Yeah, so in that sense, you're talking treasure.
Yes, of the three T's. Yes,
yeah.
yes.
And it could be money, could be goods, right?
Right. So why is this good for the soul?
Well, one, some people will get the natural effect of it. They'll say, "Wow, you know that I really do feel good when I give to others. In some ways, I actually get back more than what I'm actually giving." But that's only the after effect. Those are the feelings, right?
Mm.
Sometimes the feelings are there. Sometimes they're not. The real ultimate reason why you give alms is, one, to love God above all else, and then, two, to love your neighbor as yourself. The two great commandments.
I think it also I think it also helps in a person's not making worldly security an idol.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, because that's a true barrier to the two great commandments. I mean, you really think about it. Worldly security is a barrier to love of God and love of others.
And when you give alms, you're actually giving from your you're supposed to give from your substance. And when you do that, you feel it on a natural level that I'm giving away some of my security. I mean, money is security for a lot of people. And when you do that, you're much able, you're more clearly able to see that or to depend on He who created you out of nothing. Depend on God more than things.
There certainly is that, to be sure. And we should also say, too, I mean, there are some people, and particularly now, the means that we have at our disposal, I mean, the goods, it's not like, 150, 200 years ago, where it was probably what you said is more true. I mean, now we have so much. And actually, just even giving a small portion of that, just even a start, if you've never given to other people before, start small and realize that it's possible. And then from there, then start looking at other things and saying, do I really need that? Like when someone does spring cleaning, like you mentioned before, do I actually need these things that I have in my closet, right?
Mm.
Is it something that I could give to others? And then think, too, when I give them away, let's say I donate them, am I just giving them the rags? Or am I actually giving them something that's good and has life and is serviceable that someone else could use?
And you know what? It's kind of like cleaning house when you do that. You feel freer when you don't have stuff around.
Oh, yeah.
You notice that?
Yeah, on a natural level.
We tend to accumulate stuff, including clothing. You mentioned clothing. Give some of that stuff away that you're not always wearing. You feel freer. You're able to, if you have to move, it's not a huge deal. You don't say, oh, I've got to move all this junk. The less stuff you have, you tend to feel a lot freer in life.
Yeah. Yeah. And you want to know why? I think it's, and this is just my two cents, take it for all it's worth, but we are made by our nature for union with God. We're not just made for this earthly coil. And what is God, right? God, John says God is love. How is he love? He's so loved that he gives himself entire and full.
Yes.
Right? Why did the Son come to die that we might live? Because that's God's nature. To entire and full give himself. And then what ends up happening is when we learn not to depend on this stuff, and surely we do need to survive day to day, but when we don't make that our highest goal and priority, when we make truly love of God and others our priority, then what ends up happening is these things are taken care of anyway.
You know what? First of all, you just mentioned the first commandment. And secondly, you mentioned the Matthew chapter 6 and that chapter about dependence on God, where God says, seek first the kingdom of God and then all else will fall into place.
Yeah.
If you do that, if you put your priority first, which is love of God, first commandment, then all the other things will be given to you besides.
They will.
And not just earthly things. The more important things are, of course, the spiritual things.
Oh, sure.
The ending music is happening. I know you don't have headphones on, but we've got about 10 seconds left. Any final word?
Just do it. Just do it. Don't deliberate. Just do it. Start, give some alms. Pray a little. Even if you've never prayed before, just do it. Start with a little. Start in the morning. Start in the evening. And if you have trouble, just say, God, I have trouble. Help me.
Renewal. Renewal and the season of Advent. Thank you, Mr. John Tudoris, for delving beneath the surface with us again tonight. Thank you for listening, everybody. Up next, Rise Above the Surface with Cindy's Vinyl Vault with Cindy and Peter. For now, signing off beneath the surface, Paul Morano. See you next week. Same time, same channel.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by... It's so much more than just a profile picture. At Catholic Singles, our platform offers you many opportunities to get to know the person behind the picture. Sign up today at CatholicSingles.com. Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at KaneFord.com.